Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We need to end the gridlock and to stop passing the buck to future generations.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's that time on a Friday, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg in Studio 4 with me, John Gambling. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am very, very well. It has been some week, huh?
It's been some week, but you know, you put it back into perspective. We can talk about the national stuff, but I came down the subway and this woman started talking to me. She works on cancer prevention for the Health and Hospitals Corporation. She comes from Haiti, has been in the city 40 years, and we were talking about the good things in the city and how much progress she's making and that sort of thing. So, you know, we can talk about the big national problems and bailouts and all that sort of stuff, but in the end, individuals...
I have tried to pepper the conversation this week with exactly that. As ominous as the talk of this financial seems to be, look at the country. I mean, you know, there's you drive your car, you got a roof over your head, you got food on the table. I mean, life is good.
I testified before Congress yesterday on the environment, and I said, you know, we're sitting here and we're worried about what other people do, number one. We should be worried about ourselves. We're polluting our air. And yes, if overseas keeps polluting, it still hurts global warming. But the air that we breathe has done the pollution, most of it's us. So we have to worry about ourselves. And we always think that the other guy does it better. That, you know, they don't have problems, we do. It's the old grass is always greener phenomenon. The bottom line is, if you look at in China, the milk supply, it turns out not only was the powdered milk all polluted, now the liquid milk is all polluted.
Scary story.
We have protections, which they're controversial when you put them in, but we forget that they make our milk safe, and that's true for a lot of this stuff.
And I was in Germany, as you know, for the last 2 weeks. Yeah. The view when you are there of the environment, the German environment, and then you look back at America, you see it a different way.
Absolutely. I mean, I still think we've got the best hand to play. I mean, we've got a lot of problems. We're not addressing the environment. We're not addressing the costs of health care and the fact that our health care isn't as good as it is in Western Europe. I mean, in places like Germany, life expectancy is greater than ours, and the cost of health care per capita is less. And we should address those things. That's why I keep saying the presidential candidates should focus on those kinds of things. But, you know, take a look at the mortgage crisis and all the financial stuff, which we can talk about later. The European and Asian banks were hurt more than the American banks in many
Russia
cases.
About Russia shutting down their stock market?
Absolutely. The scary thing is we depend on these economies. China and Russia, for example, they're the ones everybody says, oh, don't have to worry about the art market. It's the foreign money that's going to come in and support it. Well, maybe the foreign money isn't there. Don't worry about the apartments, the wealth, the high-end apartments. It's foreign money. Maybe that money isn't there. And you read stories. We had a group of British members of parliament in the other day. They're on a fact-finding mission. So I talked to them for about half an hour from both the conservatives and the liberals there. And the Tories. And London is overbuilt. They have an enormous number of buildings that were built on spec and no tenants. And I remember the last time I was in London looking around the horizon from the mayor's office. Mayor's on a, you know, has a big fancy office, an ultra-modern building on the high floor. And you look at the whole city of London, there are all these construction cranes. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, we have lots of construction, but there's so much more construction here. It really is worrisome. Well, it is worrisome, but the difference is the buildings here pretty much are all rented before or sold before they're built. Not totally, and there's some residential where there may be a little bit of old building in the central business, the central area. But in London, they've got a very big problem. And London banks have gotten hurt more than the U.S. banks. Crime is growing in lots of cities around the world, still continues to come down here. So, you know, there is a reason, no matter how tough it is, and there's certainly plenty of pain here. You've got to feel sorry for people who worked at Bear Stearns or Lehman. The jobs may have been saved by J.P. Morgan, who took half the people from Bear Stearns, or Bank of America, who's taking all Merrill, or Barclays, who's buying a very big big chunk of the jobs for Lehman Brothers, but their savings are all wiped out in many cases. So
exactly.
There's pain, but nevertheless, there's still a reason. Let's not, this weekend, walk around doom and gloom. There should be optimism, and we got some problems.
All right, let's start to get into this. You've been in the middle of it right from the beginning. Yesterday, you were in Washington. Did you speak with Paulson and Bernanke and that crowd?
I went to see Chris Cox. I talked to Hank the other day. I haven't been talking to Bernanke. I've been talking to Geithner, Tim Geithner, who is the president of the New York Fed, because he's been the point man in terms of working with Lehman and AIG and those kinds of institutions. Yesterday, I talked to Chris Cox on the phone the day before, I think. I've talked to him a number of times and then went to see him yesterday because one of the real issues, and he's done some things which hopefully will help, the short selling, where it's not so much individuals gang up on a company and say, let's drive the stock down. A lot of the trading today is done by computers. And if the stock starts to go down, the computers are programmed to generate sell orders automatically to sell more because they assume it's going to go down more. But that adds on, and it's a different world we live in. It's not some guy sitting there saying, I wonder whether I should buy this stock or that stock. We have computers today at a lot of funds that read the news, read every Newswire story, and they make a decision. The computer does it based on the story of whether it's good or bad for the stock and then enter a buy or sell order.
Okay, but then this comes to the disinformation, that if somebody got disinformation, those computers would be reading disinformation.
Well, that is true, but and every once in a while you do have that problem. The other problem is you can argue it's too much information. I mean, I think that that's a better argument to make, that the trouble is to make trading decisions based on one bit of information is not necessarily in everybody's interest long term. I don't think we should ban it, incidentally. People, if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. But you have to have some perspective. And there's the argument that when you read the newspapers over a cup of coffee and have some time to digest what it says before the market opens, you probably would make better longer-term decisions than if in the middle of the day, the instant something comes out on the newswire, you react right away. The trouble is the competitiveness of these funds, and we're the blame because we're the ones that make them all very competitive. We pick which mutual fund to invest in or ETF or which company stock. The competitiveness is such that they're looking for any edge they can get. And it's just
that's
a very
what your company does.
Yeah. Well, we give them the information.
Exactly, the information. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue that you should withhold information. The problem, I think, is that people use it too quickly without putting it in context. We distribute information. It's human beings who do the contextual,
who use it,
who should sit back and think. And I, you know, somebody asked me the other day, what's wrong in the marketplace? People have forgotten. We want something for nothing. We all, and the bailout, you can argue, there'll be lots of, everybody's in favor of this morning because the stock markets are up big. But after they sit back, they say, wait a second, you're socializing losses and you're privatizing profits, and that's not good long term. I don't think Paulson and Bernanke had the luxury of that kind of a philosophical argument. There was real destruction pain, and this probably was the right thing to do. And I'm not in the trenches with them. These are both very smart guys. This country is well served. We got the right people in place. Paulson ran Goldman Sachs. He understands the markets. He understands these products. Bernanke, I think, has been a good chairman of the Fed. I think Tim Geithner walks on water. He is absolutely the guy I would want in the trenches right here in New York City. And they've got to make a different decisions at a different level. But if you get back to what are we doing? We want something for nothing. We forgot the old rules. There was a book, written by two guys, Graham and Dodd. And it talked about, many years ago, it was the ultimate textbook of how to invest money, of trying to assess value. And you could describe it, Buffett really is, for example, a Graham and Dodd guy. I'm a Graham and Dodd guy. I'm not as smart as everybody else. I think you look at the products of a company and you look at the long-term perspective, and then you don't try to trade in and out. You buy it, put it away, and don't look in the paper every day to see whether it goes up and down. If you own good companies, that's the ways you should make your investments. And you should have diversity. And we forget diversity. The people that worked at Bear Stearns and Lehman forgot diversity. They kept their savings in the company stock, and their job, their day in and day out livelihood, ability to eat, also came from the same companies. And that was just the ethic, and people yell and scream. Dick Fuld, I assume he probably never sold a share of stock. Every bonus he took in stock, or I'm sure most of it. I'm sure he lived well, but he was a believer in the company, and he did the best job he could, and that was certainly true of the people at Bear Stearns and lots of companies. But you should diversify. We've forgotten that lesson. And then the banks forgot the lesson that the old rule of absolute rule you never violate, which they all have been doing. You should borrow long and lend short. They borrowed short and lended long. So when all of a sudden they couldn't get money in the short-term market, they had this long-term obligation. You really want to be on the other side of that. And we used to have rules that we all followed to do that. And now people, because of competition, and they keep telling me I'm too old and I don't understand and there's a new paradigm, but there isn't. Nobody's going to throw out the old rules of greed and value and the way you and I learned it.
Well, I want to talk some more about this. It's fascinating. It has been the cornerstone of the conversation for the last week or so. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with you right here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. John Gambling, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's take a break. We'll be
710 WOR.
All right, we continue on a Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, 823. We're going to look for you if you've got questions for the mayor a little bit later on, 1-800-321-0710, 1-800-321-0710. The effect of what's taken place this week on the city of New York, reports this morning, could lose 40,000 jobs in the next 2 years, $3 billion, not only the city, but the state as well. Are those the kind of numbers you're thinking about?
I am much more optimistic than that. We would have had, we could have lost 10,000 jobs when Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy and put 1 million square feet of prime office space on 7th Avenue on the market. By Barclays taking that over, we dodged that bullet. Those jobs pretty much will all be secure, and they'll stay in that building. And that's good for the other developers who are building other buildings, and good for the people, although you got to feel sorry for most of these people. They, as I said before, they probably had all their savings in Lehman stock, and that's been wiped out. There are some pockets where you worry about it. I had dinner the other day at a restaurant in Greenwich Village. The owner, Da Silvana, has been there 30 years. Silvana said it's the best year he's ever had. I gave a little speech down at the India House. Harry, who owns that, and a number of other restaurants downtown, right in the middle of, right around the corner from the old Lehman Brothers building.
Right.
It's the best summer he's ever had. So there are some. On the other hand, dinner last week at a restaurant, and they were, I was talking to the maitre d', their business has slowed down. People aren't buying the expensive wines, that sort of thing. So it's spotty. Generally speaking, New York City is probably in a better position than everybody else because we still are attractive. People like low crime, people like the parks, people like the culturals, clean streets. People want to be where they're improving schools. And our tourism numbers seem to be holding up. Now, when you talk to the hotels, they're still full. Whether they're reducing their rates a little bit, I don't know. It's funny. You look at a magazine, they can have lots of ads and give them away, or they can have a few ads and charge a lot. So it's a longer-term thing. I don't think we're immune from a national downturn. I do think we are projections that are tax revenues from business taxes, sales taxes, and income taxes, we project will fall 12% in this fiscal year. And we're 2 or 3 months into the fiscal year. The state, for a slightly different fiscal year, but roughly the same time period, they think those three sources of revenues are going up 4%. One of us is very wrong. And I don't think it's
us. Is the truth somewhere in the middle, or no, you don't think
so?
No,
for the first 3 months or so, we're tracking right where you should be. And some of these things will kick in worse later on. Remember, Wall Street has lost so much money, they don't have to pay any taxes. And they're not going to be paying taxes for the next 4 or 5 years.
And bonuses that you talk about.
Bonuses are just not there. And that filters through the whole economy. So you might not work on Wall Street, but they People that do work on Wall Street, buy clothes in your store, food in your restaurant, use your taxi cab, hire you to construct something for them. And so it really does filter through. We think one job on Wall Street is the equivalent of two jobs outside of Wall Street in terms of a multiplier effect. And we are going to go through some tough times. I've got to worry about, we still have a $2.3 billion deficit for 2010. I want to address that right now. We are going to go back to every agency and say you've just got to economize a little more. Now, each time we do this, it gets harder because they cut the things that aren't quite so necessary and they find ways to do things with more with less. But that gets harder with time. The one thing I can tell you...
Are you going to have to hit the bone here at some point?
We are not going... Well, it depends on... the bone's different in every agency. And the real answer is, I can tell you what to do if you tell me the facts. So let's assume, talk about a cop. Would one less police officer on the beat let crime go up? Probably not. What about two? What about three? And you get to a point nobody really knows. So if I really knew exactly what, you'd always stop one before that. But the problem is, in the real world, whether you're running a company or a city, is trying to figure out, and you'll never know for sure, what the effect is of a change. We are not going to let crime go up in the city. It continues to come down. We are not going to walk away from our schools. We're not going to walk away from parks or clean streets or any of these things. And we're not going to walk away from the investments in the water tunnel. I was on the west side a couple days ago. There are four shafts being drilled down for the 7-line extension. That is going to be done. It's going to be done on time. It's going to be done on budget. And the west side, Steve Ross from Related, they're getting close. They've got the contract, remember, to develop the west side. I think they're going to shock everybody and come through with a fantastic project, and they'll be able to get the money. And this bailout would obviously help a little bit, but they were able to do it even without this, I think. So there's lots of good things going on, but there are certainly industries that are slowing down. You talk to a cab, these limo drivers, they have less business. You talk to some of the restaurants, not everybody is sharing. Housing prices are certainly softening, not collapsing as they are in other parts of the country. There's a lot of construction coming on board, but it's, you know, most of it is rented already or sold already, not all. We're going to have to figure out how to cut back a little bit more on our expenses and find another source of revenue, not big, but some, and I want to make sure we've addressed that problem now. The state, their revenue estimates, I think, are too high, but maybe they're right. Who knows? And I can't run the state government. That's Governor Patterson and Speaker of the Assembly, Shelley Silver, and the Majority Leader, Dean Skelos, and they've got to get their members together. And they have a different problem because they've got upstate and downstate. Upstate economy is really, it's been struggling for a long time, and it's a very different economy. You have smaller cities, typically. You have an agricultural component, which we don't have.
But if you take a weakened New York, a slightly weakened New York and a weak upstate, the state has themselves a obviously.
Well, New
problem.
York City is the economic engine right. for the state. If you go upstate, there's a conventional wisdom is, oh, those New York City people are taking all our money. You know, I mean, it's exactly the reverse. We export $12 billion to counties outside of the five boroughs. And they're going to, if they're going to balance their budget, I think part of the answer is they may take more of our money, the state, they legally can do it, and they may send us back a smaller percentage of what we send up to them. That's not good for us. They typically give us some unrestricted funds, and they give us a lot of school aid, but they're going to have a big problem, and I think, in all fairness to Governor Patterson, he's tried to address it. The political reality is Governor Patterson can't walk in and say, do this. He's got to get the Assembly and the Senate to go along. I can't walk in and say, do this. I've got to get the City Council to go along. Probably easier for me because the City Council is just down the hall, and they all are from the city.
And exactly. They all live in the same place.
Right. I mean, even though we have a very diverse city in terms of neighborhoods and that sort of thing, the diversity is less than it is between downstate and upstate.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. It's 8:30, 8:32 to be precise. Again, if you want to get in the queue, if you got a question later on, 800-321-0... 22 now before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with me, John Gambling, and you right here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. I understand one of the presidential candidates called you yesterday.
How did you know that?
Well, a little bird told me this, that Barack Obama called on you.
You haven't been talking to Stu Lozer, my press secretary, have you?
Of course it was Stu Lozer.
I've talked to both presidential candidates every couple of weeks for the last 6 months or so. And it's very flattering that they'd care what I think. Whether they really do or not, I don't know.
Oh, but I think they probably do.
Well, listen, it was the most time I've had with both of them was on 9/11. Obama showed up. They walked down the ramp together, if you remember. Obama showed up 5 minutes early, so we had a little chance to chit-chat. McCain stayed 5 minutes late, so I had a little chance to chit-chat. Yesterday, I talked to Senator Obama. He had called just wanting my views on what was going on in the marketplace and telling me what his thoughts were. And, it's useful. I think nobody's going to just listen to any one person, but you distill in your mind and combine the ideas that you get from a lot of different people. That's smart to do. And keep in mind, both presidential candidates, really, they've got to talk about what they would do after the end of January. It's the current administration that has to deal with the financial problems of this country, and to a great extent, what Senators McCain and Obama, depending on which one gets elected, are going to have to deal with is a function of what's left to them. And we don't know what's going to be left to them. You still have, here we are, not quite through the end, a couple more weeks in September. You've got October, November, December, January. You've got 4.5 months of this administration trying to leave the country in better shape for their successors. Their successors are going to come in, whichever one it is, with these ideas, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then the reality is going to strike them that Congress might not go along, and we do have a democracy. A lot of world events may overtake them. You know, we talk about regulation here, and Congress is going to do something here, but we are every day a smaller and smaller part of the world. And what you do here may not really be able to handle a problem that is global. And restrictions we put in here or aid that we put here may not apply overseas, where every one of these companies does business around the world. So, for example, Lehman Brothers goes bankrupt, a lot of jobs here. But if you take a look, Lehman Brothers had an awful lot of jobs in London and in Hong Kong and in every other major city. The regulation is different around the world depending on which country. The regulation in America is very different. We have half a dozen different regulatory agencies, each one overseen by a different congressional bureaucracy and committee structure. And what's interesting is we treat an insurance company different than a bank, different than an investment bank, different than a commodities dealer. But in this day and age, they're all doing the same thing. But different rules apply.
Yeah, they all have the same products or similar products.
Exactly. What's more, we have, for example, state charters and federal charters. We have state
regulation.
I don't know that you can say there's too much.
A lot of people are arguing that there was not enough oversight and regulation.
There is the wrong kind of regulation. You could do it with a lot fewer dollars and people invested. You could make it work a lot better if you could design the system from scratch. The reality is that most congressional committees are not going to allow any change because they want to keep their ability to influence the dialogue and to provide oversight. And some of them are very good. Some of them aren't so good. I think if you go around the world and the question is there too much regulation? Too much or too little isn't the right word. Is it appropriate? Is it effective? Is it designed to deal with the world that we have today? Or is it designed 50 years ago and hasn't changed since?
History shows that Congress, taking what you've just said, have maybe not done a very good job in designing regulation. There's a lot of talk about doing something very quick in Washington right now about this situation that we've got. Are you concerned that it's again going to be inappropriate regulation?
I think that you don't change regulation overnight. You can put in some rules. For example, you can have rules about short selling, which is something the SEC is focusing on,
Chris
and a
Cox
number of overseas. Yeah, sure, that's what I talked about with Chris yesterday. But you're not going to change the structure of regulation overnight. That's something that, I guess it's good, will take a lot of talk and a lot of leadership. Hank Paulson came into office, and the thing he said he wanted to get done the most was to sort out all of this conflicting regulation and combine it and rationalize it, streamline it, so that it can be effective. Right now, one of the problems is we have all the regulation, but it's not doing anything because there's so many ways around it, or companies can have two or three different regulatory agencies overlooking them, and they have different sets of books for them and different practices, and they have walls between two people because they've got to keep them separate. And
yeah, the Sarbanes-Oxley.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're not going to overnight solve that problem, but long term, and I said to Senator Obama last night, you've got a very different... things that he's got to worry about, and Senator McCain as well, they've got to worry about today talking to the American public and giving a grand vision of what they would do if they get elected. And they're in a heated contest. Once they get elected, it's a very different thing. There are short-term crises, which is what Hank Paulson and Bernanke and Geithner are worried about, Chris Cox. And then there's the longer-term systemic problem. We're spending money we don't have. We have trillion-dollar deficits. We haven't addressed health care, which is a disaster for the people because they're not getting as good care as they want. But for companies, I mean, it's a major part of everybody's expenses, and that holds back. We're not doing anything about improving transportation, the infrastructure, whether it's bridges or airports or roads or sewage, water tunnels, all those things that you and I have been talking about over the last year. That's another thing that really impacts this country's ability to compete and to provide jobs for our children. Immigration. We have a policy, I keep saying this, it's national suicide. We try to keep the best and the brightest out. Those are the ones who would come and keep business here. Bloomberg had a story this morning on the radio. I was listening about the birth rate. In America, we're barely staying ahead, but we are actually growing a touch. You have to have something like 2.1 children per female to maintain your population. In Europe, a lot of these countries are down at one.
Japan, even lower than that, I think in Italy and things like that.
Japan, China, with their one-child policy, it may make some sense short-term, but long-term, you know, if you want to collect Social Security, you can't have one person paying in for you to get your money out because they can't possibly earn enough to take care of themselves and take care of you. You've got to have lots of people. We've got to have a growing population. So those are the longer-term things that whoever gets elected president, Obama, McCain-Obama, are going to have to worry about.
All right. There have been a couple of people, including myself and also independently Peter King this morning, that suggested that John McCain and or Barack Obama ask Michael Bloomberg to be their Secretary of the Treasury and do it now as part of a shoring up of their position.
Well, they're not going to do anything now. Neither is has been elected, so you got to wait.
But you could not.
It's a little bit horse before the car. You know, all kidding aside, number one, I'm going to stay. I've got a commitment to the people of the city of New York to spend another 465 odd days working, and I've got the greatest job in the world, and I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. But I think there's a reason why candidates never say, if you elect me, these are the people I am going to appoint. And you can't do it because the people that you're going to appoint, number one, they might not want to do it. Number two, they have current jobs. And what are they going to do? Tell their boss, I'm going to quit on you if Joe gets in, or Jane gets elected. You can't do that. So it would be great if you knew who candidates would appoint, but the reality of the real world is they can't do that. They stand on their own.
All right. I want to get to the questions on the phone, 800-321-0710. We'll do that in just a little bit. There was talk this week about selling the bridges, Williamsburg and Manhattan, to the MTA, for the MTA to get money.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're going to, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge, you can buy the bridge. There's always jokes about that.
For a dollar.
For a dollar. There's two questions here. One, you could not do two bridges because you'd have to, if you want to toll bridges, you either do all the bridges around Manhattan or you do all below a certain thing and then use computer and photographs to charge people if they go through one of the others. But you would have a nightmare in Brooklyn and Queens. People would go, and they already do, to look for the free bridge.
Yeah.
Right now, if you come in from Brooklyn or Queens, people shop for bridges. They go Brooklyn Battery Tunnel charges, the Queens Midtown Tunnel charges, and the Triborough Bridge charges. But Brooklyn, Williamsburg, and Manhattan and Queensborough bridges don't charge. Or you can avoid it by going up through the Bronx and coming in on half a dozen bridges across the Harlem River. That's a prescription for chaos and pollution and whatever. That's not going to happen. It is possible. Tolling the bridges isn't very much different than congestion pricing with cameras. There's a variety of different schemes that you could do. The question is that where you want to get money and what are you going to do with the money? I've always, as you know, thought that we have to push people towards mass transit.
Do you believe that ultimately, there will be some form of congestion pricing to ease the problems that you've already described?
One can only hope, because we're polluting the air. Our kids are breathing, have asthma. Your job, my job, we are getting hurt because of the time spent commuting from one place to another. And if you could force people to mass transit, that would be better. In terms of, to get back to the bridges for a second, whether you sell them for a dollar or for nothing, the city owns the bridges, but the city has to maintain them. Cost hundreds of millions of dollars to maintain them. And if you were to toll them, the city would love to have the MTA or the state own those bridges and pay for the maintenance. That would be another help for the city. You joke about why sell it to them for a dollar. Well, it gets no revenue and has enormous expenses. Normally, if I told you about an asset, you'd say, I'll be happy to sell it for a dollar. Sure.
Exactly.
But I'm going to hold out for two. I'm telling you.
$2.
I'll represent the people.
Not a nickel less.
Not a nickel less.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We'll get right back to you. Let's take our final break. 10 before 9 is here, and some time for you to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Let's go to Ted out in Queens. Ted, good morning. You've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning. I think the MTA is not charging a high enough fare for the subways, Mr. Mayor. I think the $2 fixed fare should be based on the distance you travel, like the commuter railroads. I think they could generate more revenue, and then that way the commuter railroads are not subsidizing the New York City subways.
It's not a bad idea. It's done, actually, in many other cities. You get your ticket when you get on, and you run it through a machine when you get off, and it calculates how much the fare is. And it's not the least bit uncommon. And charge people who go greater distances more is a good ways of allocating costs. Of course, the people that go greater distance more, they'll be burning up the phones in 2 seconds. The real answer, interestingly enough, is the cost of riding the subway, Ted, today is lower than it was 10 or 15 years ago. It's fascinating. If you take a look at the average, certainly adjusted for inflation, it gets much lower. But $2 is when you walk in and you buy one time, one ride. Multiple rides are available because of MetroCard, which you didn't have that back when we had tokens. And so a lot of people get a lot of rides. My Spanish instructor, who goes all over the city every day to visit all of his students, he calculated, I think he told me it was 47 cents a ride. Because he buys a month,
walk for 40.
He buys a monthly card and he uses it 10 times a day, and he works hard. He works 6-7 days a week, so he really gets value out of it. Now, I, on the other hand, you talk about why I'm willing to hold out for $2 on the bridges. I have a senior Metro card, so it costs me a dollar. If I bought a monthly, I use it probably on average a little more than once a day. So I don't use it enough to get a better value than that, I think, if I bought a monthly one. But, Ted, you can look at a lot of different ways to charge. I think the most important thing is that the subway, and I keep coming back and defending the MTA, and I was talking to this woman, the woman I was talking about cancer this morning on the subway. It is so much better. The subway works. It's clean. It's safe. It's dependable. People are nice. It's air-conditioned. And when I came in 1966 to New York, none of those things were true.
You're absolutely right. All right, let's go to Lou in Queens. Lou, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Yes, good morning, Mr.
Good morning.
Mayor.
How are you?
Good, good, good. I just wanted to thank you for doing a good job with the rezoning and downzoning projects here in Queens. But you made me think of something that I hadn't thought of before when you said it's 465 days left to your term ends. Because I remember during 9/11, Mayor Giuliani tried to push you out from becoming mayor.
I don't know that he wanted to do that.
Well, I thought that he wanted to extend the term, and I thought...
What's your question?
I actually had two questions. He made me think of that when he said 465 days remaining.
Yeah, we don't want him to go either.
Right, that was part of it also, but I was saying to myself that Mayor Giuliani tried to pull this, and I was wondering, what did you think about extending the term limits? Are you going to extend the term limits? And secondly, in Queens, we needed a... more help with city planning as far as rezoning. Those are the two questions.
Well, number one, I'm not worried about term limits. That's up to you can have a public referendum, you can have the city council, or you can have the assembly, the state legislature do it. Mayor doesn't control that. I can't just do it. I'm worried about zoning in Queens. We have rezoned something like 4,000 blocks in Queens, so something like a sixth of the city. Amanda Burden and City Planning have rezoned. And what we're trying to do is to accommodate a lot of different interests. There are people who want to preserve the character of their neighborhood.
Leave it the way it is.
Leave it as. We have a problem where a lot of our infrastructure is overstretched, so if you had greater density, it couldn't handle it. That's parking spaces, it's roads, it's sewerage, it's electricity, gas, all these things, water. We have the interest of people who need housing. People are moving into the city, and we've got to build, and people have construction jobs. And what we're trying to do is to find a balance between all of those, and Amanda has done a great job.
All right, Mr. Mayor, unfortunately, as always, the time runs out all too quickly, but we will have another sit-down next Friday. Look forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. Have a great weekend. Chilly, but nice.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, right here on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. That's going to do it for me for the week. Have yourselves a great weekend. Joan.